How Did This Get Made? Are finally tackling the long-requested 1985 children's nightmare movie, The Peanut Butter Solution. For more, follow @YourWolf on social media. Happy listening.
Hey everyone, this is Paul Scheer from How Did This Get Made, and I just wanted to remind you that you can find all of How Did This Get Made's archive and ad-free episodes on Stitcher Premium. For a free one-month trial of Stitcher Premium and access to a ton of great content, just go to stitcherpremium.com and use the code BONKERS. That's BONKERS, that's the code, for a one-month free trial of Stitcher Premium. Do it.
You like podcasts, right? Whether you listen occasionally or can't get through your day without them, there's a great app you need to try. It's called Stitcher. Stitcher is a free app for iOS and Android that's really easy to use, from classic favorites to new hit shows from Oprah and Conan O'Brien, as well as the best of true crime like Serial and My Favorite Murder. Stitcher is home to all your favorite podcasts. Visit Stitcher.com to download Stitcher for free today.
A boy growing pubic hair down to his feet is only the fifth weirdest thing to happen in this movie. We saw The Peanut Butter Solution, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Cause you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth. It is I, Tall John Scheer, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? Today we're talking about the 1985 Canadian film, The Peanut Butter Solution. And boy, oh boy, how do I explain this movie? If you've not seen it, a boy loses all of his hair because he goes into a haunted house. And then ghosts gift him a recipe to grow it back, but it grows back too furiously. Like it won't stop growing. And that gets the attention of a local kidnapper who has an evil capitalist plan. I mean, I guess that like that's just scratching the surface of what is going on in this movie. We'll break this all down, but I felt like I needed to lay out some plot for you just to get in on this movie because it is bonkers. But to do that, we have two amazing co-hosts. Please welcome Mr. Jason Manzoukas. How are you, Jason?
Paul, I wonder if you noticed that you just said that his hair grows back too fast, too furiously, which is, I mean, I wonder, are you trying to intimate that this might be part of the Fast and Furious? Is this a like a nascent? Is this the beginning of that story? I wonder. I mean,
honestly, I was just in awe of this film as much as I am of any of the Fast and Furious films. I mean, this blew me away the same way.
I was gobsmacked watching this. Have never seen it, have never really even heard of it. So just, this is one of those great movies that we do where I put it on, I have no idea what's going to happen. I start watching it and I was confounded by this movie. And also, weirdly, very, again, you know, I'm, you know, we're all in our homes still, sure, blah, blah, blah. Like, very, like, heartbroken for this young boy, you know? There's a lot of, like, a lot of emotion. This brought up a lot of emotion for this poor kid. So, I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I have a lot to say about it. I will say, and I know it's an overused term, but, like, I felt high while I was watching it because it was there. It just felt so bizarre. It felt like I was totally not high while watching it, but yet everything didn't quite make sense, although it linked up. And I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, every turn the movie took shocked me. I was like, wait, this is what this movie's doing now? Every turn, every act, at the end of every act, when the new act started, the movie became a different, let's get June, let's call it. I'm like, I'm into it.
I'm surprised that you saw acts in this movie. One of the great sadnesses of my life was that I did not get to watch this movie with our other co-host, as I normally do. Please welcome June Diane Raphael. How are you, June?
I'm okay, Paul. How are you?
I am good. Talk to me. I haven't even really gotten to connect with you since you've seen this movie. What's on your mind?
This, I think I heard you say in that beginning intro that you both walked into this not knowing much.
Zero.
I didn't know a thing.
Yeah.
Zero. So much so that when the opening credits started, I thought, this isn't right. This is
interesting. Yeah.
A French movie. I'm on the wrong. I've got it all wrong. And I thought that for probably the duration of the film.
Well, now we've just learned from Paul that it is in fact Canadian, maybe even French Canadian, which makes sense as to why everybody has accents.
Everybody has accents, but yes. The opening was also in French. I thought I was watching a French movie.
Yes.
Well, when they show the newspapers, it has French titles of the articles. I mean, yeah, that is, yeah. It's Montreal, I believe.
But then they go to lengths. No, I thought they said they were in Toronto.
I don't know. When we looked around, it was like when we were in Montreal shooting Long Shot. Like
they definitely weren't in Toronto and everybody had a French Canadian accent. But I thought that they kept on. I thought that the movie was taking place in Toronto.
I didn't even think it was Canadian because my understanding is that Canada is all Little Italy's.
I kept expecting
Little Italy to show. They run into Little Italy.
To me, this movie was so Canadian.
Oh, I mean, this movie couldn't be more Canadian.
It could not.
The only way it could have been more Canadian is if they had hockey instead of soccer. Like, that's the only way.
Okay, first of all, but why? Okay, I want to talk about this for one second. We have to start from the beginning, but... You bring up hockey, you bring up soccer. We did see them. We did see Michael at soccer lessons. We hear a lot about soccer. And
soccer
then
lessons? I don't think we call them soccer lessons.
That was a soccer game. No, it's a game, June. That was a game.
Fine. But then it's not what I call a soccer game. I'll tell you that.
Learn different jerseys.
You know what these kids need to do? Get more lessons. You know, that was good lesson. That's what happens at the end of the game. Good lesson, good lesson, listen. Good lesson.
Oh,
good
Jason,
lesson.
Don't antagonize June because June traveled, as she will tell me many times, around the state as a soccer champion.
Oh, yeah. I've heard tales.
I was on a great team. I was not a great soccer player. My talents were in other sports, in different athletics, but I was on a great soccer team. But what I was going to say is what's crazy is all this talk of soccer, and then the father is painting a picture of the family playing tennis.
It's the badminton court in their backyard. The painting is of in the backyard. The sister is playing badminton. Do you remember?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, there's like a scene where...
In this movie,
yes, there's a scene in which the daughter, Susan, it doesn't matter, but that's the connection I made. I was like, oh, that's their backyard, like little badminton court is what I believe.
Yeah, he really seems to paint exactly what is going on in their lives.
Well,
so much
with the exception of all the dressed up birds.
Oh, boy. I mean, And unfortunately, this is not a live show where we can break down every piece of art because the art in this movie,
Amazing.
He is a bad artist, right? I mean, he's a bad artist.
It's subjective, but yes, absolutely.
Would I hang the badminton painting in my house? Absolutely. I mean, without a doubt.
Having seen your collection, Jason, I do feel like that has a nice home and is in great company in your home.
I would argue that the art of the little boy looking at the toaster at his bald head would fit more in the Jason collection. But here's the thing about that piece. He never saw that happen. He was upstairs when the boy had the toaster. So he either heard tale of that or he imagined it.
This is like, there was parts of this movie, Paul, where I wonder, like there were parts of it where I felt like this was almost your childhood in a way that the little boy, is his name Michael the little boy?
Yes.
Michael.
Just seems to be on his own in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he seems to be, like, this is an 80s movie where, like, that captures this idea of, like, kids are just, like, free. Like, the dad is
the generation
not,
of, like, the latchkey kid.
Exactly. The dad is, like, in his attic painting away, not really dialed in. The mom is in Australia because her father passed away, is, like, just a throwaway line.
His house. The mom has been away for an indeterminate, seemingly... I would say if you told me she's been gone for 2 years, I would buy it. She's been selling his house.
The minute the son returns unconscious, you know, in a shopping cart. I would assume the mom would come back, like, something's up with my son. He loses, the son is having a medical situation, and the mom is like, I guess I'm staying in Australia. And the dad is like, well, ah, you're fine.
Nobody cares. Updated her, Jason. I believe she would have come home stacked.
Oh, perhaps, yeah.
It didn't seem like anyone was updating her. To me, this is a cautionary tale, like, for all moms out there, never leave.
I thought she was dead for most of it.
I thought that the father was hiding something, absolutely. I thought it was going to be a metaphor that he was hiding that she had died and that she was in Australia. Like, that was how he was getting them through it. Because here's my theory. Suze, the young girl, the daughter.
Love Suze.
Suze really has taken over the mother position, and I don't think Suze wanted the mom to come back at all. Suze is, like, doing bills.
Yeah, she's wearing her mom's robe. She's doing, like, mothering. She's taking care of Michael. She's also, like, her relationship with her father has become very bizarre, I think. Like, she's doting on him in a way that's weird. Like, everybody, all the relationships in this movie are very bizarre, I think. You know, the dynamic between the siblings is weird. The dynamic between the siblings and the father. The father himself is just a bizarre character.
He needs to be institutionalized. I mean, you do see this happen, though, where a lot of times when there's a dad and a mother either passes away or there's a divorce, the dad will make the oldest daughter like a little mini mom, a mini wife. And it's very, very disturbing.
Oh, I've heard stories.
I will say, though, that I was obsessed with Suze, and there is, despite all, this movie is insane. There's a quality to it, though, where every once in a while I was like, I am fascinated by these scenes. I believe this weird world. There was a tone to it, and some of the acting, like between Suze and her brother and Connie, I was just taken with.
So you're okay with close sibling relationships when they're younger. It's once they're adults that you don't like it. Oh, you have a cutoff age.
So what, only brother sister.
So once they can drink, they can no longer be friends.
They can be friends, but not too close.
Not too close. Yes, yes. I feel like I know what you're saying, June, in the sense that for me, I'll say, the movie is straight up bananas, right? Like, all of the beats, all of the plot of this movie is completely disturbing and insane.
Yes.
But the movie I was going to reference was, Cat People? What was the, Sleepwalkers? Was that the movie?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the movie I was going to reference because it was similarly, like, weirdly, maybe also French, but also, or not, maybe Canadian or something. Like, there was a weird family dynamic in that too. And this, there was like a real sadness that suffused this movie that I felt like a normal 80s kid movie wouldn't have this much sadness and trouble for the lead boy, you know, for that lead character.
Nothing was aspirational in this movie. Like, I didn't want to hang out with them. I didn't want to be with them. I didn't want to be in their house. I didn't think anything was cool. And a lot of the times in these 80s movies, it's 1985.
But that's Canada too.
The kid gives up. The kid, Michael, in the third act, Michael gives up. He's like in an iron lung where his hair is just growing. And the art teacher is turning his hair into hairbrushes. He's kidnapped 20 kids. He's put them in pink gis. And when Connie comes to save Michael, Michael's like, who cares? I'm happy enough here. Like, the lead character gives up.
Well,
it's crazy.
That's what's so crazy. Like, the narrative shifts to Connie and his younger sister, Maylin. It's so strange.
By the way, Connie,
for a while, become the heroes.
Yeah.
I love Connie. Conrad, he is his little friend who's wearing a pretty sweet leather jacket and a black fedora. And I just want to give you like a taste of the tone of this movie. But by the way, it really is hard to describe. Our lead character and Connie go to this like scary house. Michael goes inside the house, gets a fright. Can't even believe
big
what I'm
fright.
Saying. Just gets a big fright. We don't
which
know what
they,
the big
which
fright
they
is.
Say, which they keep saying throughout the movie. Different characters say the fright, a fright.
Yes.
As if that's like a term that we all recognize as like a thing we know.
He doesn't even know what scared him. He just walks in, and it's like that opening scene in Ghostbusters where the librarian sees the ghost. He's like, ah! And, you know, his hair kind of just gets on edge. And then he wakes up the next morning completely bald. And this is the moment of realization that our main character, a young boy, is completely bald. It's him and his friend Connie sitting down at a table. I believe Connie's always wearing the fedora. Just take a listen. This is the realization moment here.
Connie, do I have any hair at all? Push. Not much. Tell you the truth, none actually. Yeah, take it. I'm bald. I really am bald.
Like, it's so lethargic.
What's weird about it is, like, Michael, who's the little boy who has the fright, wakes up and his hair is now gone. Like, he is totally bald, right?
Yes.
But he arrives at the breakfast table not aware of the fact that he is now completely bald.
He doesn't have his eyes open, Jason.
That's what I was just going to say. He still has his eyes closed. And what we're to believe, he hasn't even touched his head. And even though his father and his sister are like, casually, oh my God, you're bald. And then they walk out of the room like nothing's going on. And it's him and it's Michael and Connie that have that's when Michael finally looks in the toaster and sees his reflection. Like, the father and the sister are like so blasé about all of these insane things, including when Michael goes missing. The 20 kids go missing in this town, and everybody's still going to school, still hanging out.
Kids in one very small town. And
but now that I understand it's Canadian, it makes sense because Canadians don't care about their children.
No.
You know, that's right, Canada.
But by the way, here's what I'll say about Canada, because I know we have a bunch of amazing listeners there. I actually think that their parents are very chill. It's like, if our kid goes missing, they'll come back eventually. Like, we'll figure it out. Like, we'll get him back.
We don't lock our doors. He'll be able to get in.
We know that even Canadian kidnappers are not that bad. They will return our kid eventually. Whenever they're done using them for their capitalist plot to make paintbrushes, they'll come back. I mean, it's fine. It's one less thing I got to worry about.
The art teacher, I could talk about the art teacher from his class to his child slave labor sweatshop to the inappropriate shoulder touching to the ripping up. I mean, the accent to the jacket made of hair for the end of the movie. He's wearing like a duster made of hair.
It's like Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat of hair.
Sergio and the Amazing Technicolor haircoat.
And he's wearing that coat and running through a hallway full of hair.
He's also like delivering paintbrushes wearing a coat made of hair.
I'm really interested in that piece of it. And basically the plot, because it turns out when Michael first wakes up that morning after the big fright and goes bald, his dad and Suze. And by the way, I was obsessed with Suze's style and her little sweaters with Oxford shirt. I just thought she was so great.
But did Suze go to school, by the way?
I don't know. I mean, she's a homemaker now.
I think she was talking about getting a part-time job at the bank. I think she's a 12-year-old.
Going for her real estate license.
12-year-old bank teller.
But when they go to that doctor who...
Poundstein Epstein was his name.
Also, I don't know that. Also has an accent.
Well, doesn't it end up that he's that doctor who's also not that concerned that Michael woke up without any hair?
Everyone's pretty blasé.
Okay, so turns out, though, that he's the art teacher's brother.
And also the art dealer's brother. So these brothers are basically make up 40% of the population of this town.
Yes, this is Little Italy. They are.
This movie has like five characters in it. It's Suze. It's the dad. It's the son who's bald. Connie, And then the three brothers. I mean, that's it. That's seven characters.
And the principal, who's pretty great.
And who's got a British accent. The principal's got a British accent. And then the math teacher. And Connie's younger sister as well. And later, comes in later in the movie.
But here's my question. So turns out, we find out that the art dealer had been, knew where his twin brother, the Italian art teacher, was, and the doctor led them to that art dealer, blah, blah, blah. Is there any world in which this was a big master, like, in which the art teacher, Señor, was...
Wow, you're really putting a real spin on that, Señor.
Really leaning in on it.
But plotting this from the beginning so that no one would question what was happening to this kid's hair?
Oh, so the doctor's playing it very... Well, here's the thing. The doctor's like playing it very much like that's not a big deal, but there is no hair factory without Michael. But this seemed to be like he was kidnapping these kids before... I mean, or at least he kidnapped kids really quickly.
Yeah, well, he really only... it's only when... Because I don't think, to your point, June, I don't think Señor could have planned this because... The recipe comes from ghosts?
Yes. The recipe, but
he's not involved in that. So, and I just want to reiterate, because we have not said this yet in the podcast.
We haven't talked about what the peanut butter solution
The recipe for how to grow hair comes to Michael via ghosts. That's part of the movie.
Were those ghosts also, and I'm going to use the term that they use in the movie, I'm not saying this is an acceptable term, the winos? Because when Michael gives a wino a dollar, that seemed like that was one of the ghosts.
I was a little confused, and I almost rewound to try to figure it out. And then, honestly, I just
Yes, very quickly, what I can say is my understanding from a very thorough watching of this movie was that the house that burned down was being used as like a squat for homeless people, winos. What they're calling winos, who are also, we see Michael give one of the winos money outside of the bank.
He has a lot of money for a kid his age. I was surprised to see him peeling off like some paper money for a wino.
Oh yeah, the kid's rich, you know, he's out there. But keep in mind, it's Canadian money, so it's not real. anyway, so... So I think this act of kindness that Michael gives this wino money and then they die, they then start to, and so the fright, do we ever understand what the fright was? Was it just that he'd seen dead bodies? What was the...
I thought the fright was that he saw those winos as ghosts. They don't really, because the second time he goes into the house, he's there. But so that kind of defeats the purpose of he was nice to the winos, but then they gave him a fright. Unless you're right, maybe he just saw a dead body, like...
That's true. We never get that answer. But regardless, to repay that kindness where the kid has paid them, the ghosts visit him in his dreams and give him a recipe to grow hair, which is what is the peanut butter solution. It's all these different ingredients. But again, this doesn't happen until like an hour into the movie.
What you're saying right now, by the way, Jason...
Yeah.
Is insane.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen for like, we're an hour. Like, I thought this movie was going to be about the struggles of a kid who loses his hair. He tries wearing a wig, and it was going to be about him like coming to terms with his life, you know, being bald and what that means and what hair means for kids and all this. And like that he's going to, that it's going to be like a story about being an outsider or feeling like an outsider, like an inverse Teen Wolf, basically.
What was that movie where it was about someone who had like, was an albino and he like wore fedora.
Powder.
So the guy, I thought it would be a little bit more Powder-esque.
But that's not the case. It's this other movie with ghosts and concoctions. And then he puts too much peanut butter in and he grows hair at a rate that is visible. Like he's visibly growing hair.
He's growing hair but he's growing hair from the minute they recognize that hair is growing. By the way, we skipped one piece of crucial information. He is visited by these ghosts who are raiding his kitchen to take stuff back to wherever they live in Ghost World. But then when he fucks up the solution because the parents or the dad thinks he's going to make it to eat it, they come back the next night to be like, all right, you didn't write down the recipe. We're going to help you because you're a nice boy. Like the ghosts come twice. They come a second time because he forgets the recipe. Like, it's such a funny,
weird the first scene where they're making so much noise and he comes in and he's like, stop making so much noise, you're going to wake my dad. And they're like, no, close your eyes. And then they make all the noise, but you can't hear it. I was like, ooh, this is kid logic that I like.
I
like that this movie has a logic to these ghosts because, yes, they're disruptive, but what's the point if you're a ghost of loading up boxes of food?
Yes.
My assumption is the dad's not going to come down and open the cabinets, and I don't think that food is leaving.
I'm also going to just say one thing, and it's a home design issue, and I just need to get it off my chest. The cabinets were way too tall because when the father puts the girl on his shoulders, she's almost able to reach the top shelf of the cabinet, which means that anyone in that house would have to use a stepladder anytime to get anything out of that pantry.
Those are Canadian cabinets. That's what my interior designer calls them, Canadian cabinets. He said, if you want a really high, tall cabinets, well, we can install it. It's like a California king-size bed.
Manute Bol was a cabinet maker and only made cabinets for himself.
Well, remember we were convinced, Paul, in the other house to build that vanity in the bathroom with like very high... This guy told us, like, oh, you're both tall people. You need, your sink needs to be taller.
And it then was the best advice.
Do you think so?
Yes, because it was at our waist. We could actually, like, you didn't have to bend down that much. I think people who were shorter were kind of unnerved by it, but.
But I think in selling the house, that was troubling because it was so.
Such
we
a
had
tall
9 foot
sink.
Counters.
Tall...
We had nine.
Wait a second. You think it affected the resale value of the house because the sink was so tall?
Definitely. If you're a short person, there's no way, like you literally can't wash your face.
You know, the way that they're scanning people's temperatures before they go into stores, we had a sign out on our front lawn that said, if you're not 6 feet, you can't come in to look at the house. We were very heightist.
This tall to use sink.
I mean, you can invite over the shorties all you want for the guest bathroom. It's fine.
But you have to make them sign a waiver.
Yeah,
you have to make them sign a waiver
bath.
Because, listen, this is dangerous for someone your height to be. I don't want you to drown.
I did like that they were a higher sink. I appreciated it.
I did too, but I've thought a few times about one of the people who bought the house and how she's faring in there. I mean, she's a lot shorter than us.
Oh, yeah. Suze, meanwhile, poor Suze is up in making every meal. Making, you know, like when is she living her life? When is it time for Susie to live her life?
I don't know. I don't know.
I wanted to see Suze and Connie get something together. I felt like they had something.
Paul, what?
Ew.
Well, no.
Ew.
No, I'm not saying I wanted to see them. I didn't want to say like I wanted to see them have sex.
This is weird because when you shared your screen earlier...
10.
When you shared your screen earlier, there was an open window that did seem like you were writing fan fiction for Suze and Connie.
Well, yeah, I mean, as adults, they reconnect. They reconnect over this crazy semester.
Is that why it was called The Reunion?
Well, yeah, I mean, I love Richard Linklater, and this is kind of very much like Before Sunrise, that kind of a thing. So Peanut Butter Solution is the first one. This is 30 years later, and we're kind of catching up with them. I think it's beautiful.
Hi, I'm Paul F. Tompkins.
And I'm Nicole Parker.
And we have a podcast that's out right now called The Neighborhood Listen.
That's right. On The Neighborhood Listen, we take real posts from neighborhood networking websites and use them for hilarious character improv.
And we have very special guests like Carl Tart, Tawny Newsom, Mary Holland, Nicole Byer, Bobby Moynihan, Lauren Lapkus, and many, many more.
New episodes every Tuesday. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your pods. The Neighborhood Listen.
This was an ad about it.
Here's what I don't understand. So Connie ends up using the peanut butter solution to grow pubic hair.
Yes.
And that's a crazy moment. I want pubes.
His story is very unsettling.
Oh,
because Michael's...
Ever.
Michael's story, yes, we're watching Michael grapple with this insane thing that's happening to him, which is he's growing hair at a rate that he cannot control, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes over his life. He gets kicked out of school. It gets him in
teachers
trouble.
Teachers protest. Teachers literally say,
resign.
We'll resign because your hair is growing too much. Like,
but
they're
not
because
he's misbehaving. They're not upset that his hair is growing that much. Well, maybe they are. They don't want, which I did appreciate, they don't want... his hair to be clipped during class because it's distracting, which I can understand.
Yes, the principal is like the scissor cutting is too noisy. I get it. You know,
I get it. I was very uncomfortable watching that.
It was distracting.
It was really distracting.
Well, Connie's just filling up paper bags full of Michael's hair during math class. That would be very weird. If that was happening in my math class, I would be like, what the fuck is going on?
I also think that Connie was doing a bad job of cutting hair. Why is he being so gentle and trimming? Just cut it, like make a big whoosh, whoosh, just cut it from the back.
Buzz it. Just get clippers.
Yes. And then he could do it once a period. But I will say that those kids were cheering for.
There are several moments in the movie where the kids are cheering.
He's like, I want to learn. You can't kick me out of here. I need to learn. And the kid's like, yeah, he does. Just because he has hair. I mean, by the way, when he didn't have hair, he was ostracized. But when he had too much hair, he was embraced.
Oh, as a bald man,
did you relate to that, Paul? Yeah.
As a bald man, I relate to this, and I see it, and I hate these kids who automatically had a bald song at the ready.
I was like, how did they have a taunt ready to go?
Like, when are these kids running into bald children? When they rip his wig off and the glue, and you see it, and he's on the soccer field.
Oh, that was
the soccer field where there's no net. Where like they kick a ball through the goalpost and some kid just has to run really far to go get the ball. But they have this song. I want to play this bald song really quick. Devin, if you just drop that in.
Paul, are you going to be okay to hear this?
I mean, it's going to be hard.
This is going to be very activating for you. Do you see what I mean by Senor's expression there? It seems like he's plotting something already just by looking at him.
Well, I think what they're doing is they're having you and there's another scene later. So they're having you clock Senor, notice him bald. And then there's a later scene where he sees him with crazy hair. And
looking
that's
like
when
Cousin
Senor,
from the Addams Family.
Yes, that's when I feel like Senor... makes the connection and is like, oh, wait a minute. I can use that. You know, give me some of that.
But
long
Senor,
hair.
So Senor is
give
fired.
Give me some of those flowing locks.
Senor is fired because he's not creative, yet he kind of wants to penalize the art world by making very overpriced brushes. Is that kind of it?
He's fired, Paul, because he's harassing the students.
But the principal finds out he's been fired from two other schools, has changed his look, is a fraud, has been been arrested for passing off forged paintings. He's a criminal.
By the way, should have done that background check before he started.
By the way,
this is Canada. They trust you there.
Yeah, if you just show up in Canada and say, I want to teach kids art, they're like, sure, go ahead. They're just Canadian kids. They're pretty much like, we just let them roam free.
Yeah.
I heard that Trudeau just kind of walked into the prime minister's house and was like, I'm going to take this over. And people are like, all right, cool. Seems like he knows what he's doing. I will say this, though. Senor, and I think this is what they were trying to show, was Senor hated imagination. He didn't like seeing kids. Like when Michael drew the picture of the dog, Senor has a dog and he uses his dog as part of the art class. When Senor displays his dog and Michael draws flames around the dog, he's like, no, there's no flames there. He's cutting off kids' imaginations. And so I think what he wants to do is say, you know what, fuck this art world with their imaginations and their beautiful creations. My brother makes some money off of this. I'm going to charge the artists more money than they'll ever need for this magical or for this regular paintbrush because fuck the art world. I don't like imagination.
When we go to Senor's child slave factory, he's this is where I was like, what is happening? Senor himself is painting paintings that are so magical. There are magical worlds that you can step inside of them and disappear into the paintings.
Right, because this hair paintbrush has something in it that you only need to dip it in one color.
The peanut butter solution.
But it's not the peanut. It's not the peanut butter solution he dips it in. It's the hair.
Hair has the peanut butter.
The hair has been grown from the solution.
But
the hair is magic.
But if Michael fucking listened and didn't put more peanut butter in it, they told him, the ghost told him, don't use more peanut butter. Like, his hair would have just been normal. So does Michael deserve it? Yeah, he kind of does.
Wow, Michael is the villain?
Oh.
Wow, this is wild.
They told him, don't use too much peanut butter.
Okay, but here's
butter.
What I don't understand. So what I was saying before, though, about Connie is, so Connie
His
decides
pubic hair.
That he, yes, Connie decides that he wants pubic hair. And which is that whole sequence is very upsetting, realizing it's growing out of the bottom of his pants.
Well, it's coming down his leg. On
it's
both
referenced
sides.
A number of times. Somebody, is it the teacher or somebody that says, and it looks like you've got a little problem as well. And
yes.
He hasn't noticed that his pubic hair is pouring out of his pants
and
bottoms.
What's so interesting about it is, I mean, it forced me to go down the rabbit hole of like, wow, if pubic hair were to grow that long, like, would it look like that? Like, would it look long and silky like that? Because actual
like
pubic hair is a very different type of texture.
But again, peanut butter solution.
Could you say...
Peanut butter solution.
Peanut butter solution. I'm glad. That's just something now that once it's said, it has to be said by everybody. I like it. I was like, you know, this is a movie that could... They could have just donated all this hair to Locks of Love. Or Locks
of
Love.
Well, they were bagging it up.
I don't think they accept pubic hair.
You know, I was just going to ask, do they accept pubic hair? Because I'm willing to... I don't know. Does Locks of Love or Locks for Love... I'm not sure what it's called. I just know that they take hair.
You have to cut it in a very specific way for them to take
sure.
it. Like,
so how many inches of hair do you have to tie off to send to them? And does it matter what kind of hair? That's all I'm asking.
I mean, look, the way that hair...
I'm very upset.
The way that hair came out of his legs, I think anyone would be happy to have that as a wig.
That's what I'm saying. It looks like a great... It looks like silky, healthy
yes.
hair.
Oh, like, thriving, vibrant
a horse's mane. But this is what I was going to say, though, Paul, is when Connie wakes up one night and he's tossing and turning within his pubic hair, all he has to do is say, stop. Stop.
That's what I want to ask.
And
does it stop?
Yes.
Because he wakes up. This is like a scene from a horror movie.
Yeah.
He wakes up and he's like, it's itchy. It's itchy. And then he looks down and his pubic hair.
Oh, God.
Is growing across the floor visibly.
Oh, God.
Like it's moving.
Like a tentacle. Like,
is this a child's movie?
That's what I want to know. Like, and so, and he just says basically cut it out and it does.
Can I just tell you something? A deleted scene, which I found on YouTube, as this movie is on YouTube, it's also on Amazon Prime, but the deleted scene on YouTube, when he yells stop, his voice changes and it would change for the rest of the movie. He was dubbed by another actor. They changed that at the last minute. So his voice became super low, like, he goes, stop, stop.
Oh, so it's like puberty, basically?
Yes. So he basically goes through puberty in this movie. They kind of, I guess, last minute changed it because it was in the trailer for the film. But
So if Michael goes through puberty, then he'll be able to stop the growth of his head hair?
No, because it's a different thing.
His seems to be related to the fright.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
But Michael has to give the fright to somebody else.
Yeah, there's a lot of magic that I don't understand. The movie, here's the thing. The movie is full of magical characters, but no rules, right? Mm. No, like, there are ghosts, there is a fright, there are paintings you can walk into. There's all this kind of magical stuff.
Yeah, there's magical art, there's terrible art. Yeah.
That facilitates things happening, but none of it, and nobody ever seems to be trying to put together what are the rules of this so we can either succeed with it or we are trapped or we're failing at it. There's no exposition. There's no characters who are seeking information. Like, Suze and the dad and everybody is just kind of like freestyling.
Ideally, Michael should have been tricked by someone to go in that house to get the fright so they would get their hair back. Because it seems like that's what he's got to do. He's got to trick Señor to go in there and get the fright because then he gets his hair back. But then it doesn't explain
Connie,
why the peanut butter solution stops working.
Connie does that, and it seems as though it just occurs to him to do that. He doesn't, that's not his plan. You know what I mean?
No.
What I couldn't figure out is why is everybody in the dark all the time and just kind of like going with it?
Well, when Connie is kidnapped, he quickly comes up with a great cover story that his parents are dead, to which the kids verbally out loud, just like, is that true? Is his parents dead? And then like one kid even runs up to him and is like, is your dad dead? And he's like, shut up. Like,
but is his dad dead?
No.
I don't think we know. Oh, well, no? Do we know for sure
not?
I don't know that he's not,
because that last scene when the mom eventually comes home for that final moment and they're all hugging, I felt so sad for Connie. They're all hugging and Connie is just, Suze, the dad, the mom, Michael, and you feel like everything's going to be okay. And then they just cut to Connie just watching them smile.
Connie leaves his sister at the lair.
Well,
Connie goes home with the...
But not only that, but when Connie gets to the lair and is seeing, like, this child factory, he says to someone, I'm here to save Michael.
Yeah.
No mention of the fact that his sister...
His sister is missing. His sister is missing.
All right, so this is a bombshell. When we find out that Connie's sister is kidnapped, like, we're freaked out because Michael's kidnapped. And then Connie just kind of drops it into casual conversation. This is Connie talking about the missing kids. Take a listen.
I think he's gone mad. But it's not his fault. 20 other kids were missing from school.
20? I thought only 10.
No, 20, including My Lin, my baby sister.
Oh, that's terrible. Now, if we could only get Dad going.
Change of topic. That's it.
What does that mean, get Dad going?
Like, they because dad has lost his mind at this point. He's been snapping his brushes. He's like, he's okay. Too, like, in his head. He's crazy. Again, no police. There's no police presence. There's no, nobody seems to be actively working on it. There's just newspaper headlines, increasing number of children missing.
But look at Suze. Suze doesn't even ask a follow-up. He basically is like, yeah, and my sister is kidnapped too. Like, he doesn't seem to be bothered by it.
They are reporting
facts. She's unfazed.
Unfazed. They're reporting facts as though, like, this is something that's happened in a town far, far away that they have no personal connection to.
Suze is just relaxing in that scene. She's like chilled out and he's like, including my baby sister.
Yeah.
And including my baby sister, he says, and she doesn't change at all. She's just like, if only we could get Dad going again.
It's almost like he was like, my favorite thing to eat is like peanut butter sandwiches. And she's like, cool, yeah. You know, we got to figure out my dad. Like, it is treated as a non sequitur, not like I'm also in the same fucking crazy situation where my...
And their solution is, maybe we'll
the
just...
Listen,
I've got... No, yes, the peanut butter solution. Their
peanut
solution is, maybe I'll just go back... Like, again, there's 20 missing kids, and their plan is to go and buy the dad new brushes so he can start painting again, so that he can get his mind back, so he can help them find the missing children. That's their plan. So when they go to the art supply store, they just happen to find a brush made. Keep in mind, these are two people whose siblings are missing. Their siblings are gone, and the thing they're doing is going and buying paintbrushes so that the dad can wake up. And they accidentally are like, you know what? This brush reminds me of something. Wait a minute. I've cut this hair before. This is Michael's hair.
By the way, it looks like a beautiful brush.
Well, okay. I've never seen a brush like that. I've never seen a brush with hair just like flopping over. And it actually doesn't look like Michael's hair. It looks like Connie's pubes.
Okay, I'm listening.
It did not look like Michael's hair. Michael's hair is light.
Yes,
and
I agree.
Like reddish blonde. And also, like, why, I don't understand why any artist would ever pick up, like, is he actually selling these paintbrushes? Because I used to paint. I haven't painted in a long time. I've never seen a brush that looks like that.
You, in high school, weren't you part of a traveling painting team?
Yes, we would go travel from school to school.
Yeah.
I will say, Gene, that
for paint competitions,
when I was in Japan with my dad, we did some calligraphy together, and I used brushes very similar to that. And I looked at that brush. Paul, I was like, ooh, I would love to. What?
That was a giant. That brush was like 12 inches long, and the hair itself was flopping over. I mean, it didn't look like you could get a...
It looked like a horse's tail or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I've seen brushes, or at least when I had horses, like we had like I had like a crop that had like set sort of like a...
Wait, what? Talent.
And you made paint brushes out?
You had
their
horses?
Tails?
Wait, I'm focused on when we had horses.
Oh yeah, Paul had horses. He was actually kicked in the face by a horse and has a scar.
What?
Yeah.
What are you talking? Wow.
He just literally thrown
thickens!
Across the barn.
Wow. Wait a minute. Can I ask an honest question? Paul, were you raised by horses?
Look, they were part of my life, and you know, and I think that, you know, everybody around me, I contributed to my parenting, the miseducation of Paul Scheer.
The horses were like, we want that Tabasco V8.
I was playing hide and go seek with my babysitter, and I hid behind a horse, and the horse was getting maybe like something behind him, so he gave a little bit of a kick, and the corner of its hoof sliced open my cheek. And it kind of threw me backwards. But it wasn't like a full kick to the face. It was.
But you got hurt. That's scary.
I got many stitches. Yeah, I got many stitches from the sharpness of the hoof.
And did they let you put down that horse in retribution?
You know, I honestly, they made me apologize to the horse for hiding behind him, and that, you know, that was something I really took with me. But
You do have a special connection to horses and all animals, but specifically horses.
You really think so?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, all right. Well, I was going to say that like one of the horse crops I used to use looked a little bit like that. It had like a little bit more of a tail like that. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering that. I don't know.
You were riding a horse with a giant paintbrush instead of a crop?
By the way, can we just talk about these kids are making 500 brushes a day, right? And there's 20 kids. So that means that they're making 10,000 brushes, I guess. They all have to make 500 a day, so they're making 10,000 brushes a day.
Oh my gosh, great question, Paul, because this is what it was so crazy about this movie. Like, this art teacher is now building a giant business. He's spending, he seems to only be going to one very small art store in Toronto one day a week. I don't know how many other art stores there are, but like, where is he pushing this product?
You know, and if it's such a good product, like, why not scale it up, you know, go on Shark Tank or something and be like, listen, sharks, I'm senor. These are the brushes. These are the magical brushes, you know?
Well, also, I mean, look, he clearly doesn't need it. He seems to need more and more brushes. Like, he's being able to sell 10,000 brushes. By the way, I just want to say that as we were talking, I did Google it. I was not wrong. There is such a thing as a horsehair crop. I'm sending it to you guys now. You can all enjoy it. So I felt nervous to embrace how much I knew about horses.
I believe you.
Put it in the chat. Put it in the chat.
All right. Put it in the chat.
So yeah, I did maybe use a magical crop. You know, whenever I did hit my horse with it, we would go into a magical landscape where we'd ride over rainbows and go into like marshmallow castles. I mean, I never thought about it. But yeah,
dump it in the chat.
Put it in the chat.
I sent it to you over email, the way that I'm working.
Oh, why wouldn't
today.
You put it in the chat?
Because I'm on my phone. Cram it in the chat.
So 10,000 brushes a day. The kid is on a diet of yogurt. They mention that very casually. They go,
that is not good.
A diet of yogurt. Like, he's sedated on a diet of yogurt.
Can I ask a quick question about that specifically? Because I wrote that down too. I was like, that would insinuate that somehow yogurt or dairy or something like that was part of the peanut butter solution or was part of the hair growth process, like that the senior would be feeding Michael something that is promoting the continuation of him to keep growing hair. But it seems like, no, that is not the case. He's just only feeding Michael yogurt, which is not, I mean, Michael must be lying up in that thing, growing hair at an alarming rate, just having diarrhea constantly.
Listen,
he doesn't.
Paul
need
and I had a
anything.
Whole conversation about this last night because I thought yogurt was maybe causing our son to have like a lactose intolerant reaction, and he said there wasn't any milk in
as a kid, yogurt was a savior for me because I felt like I could always eat that. But maybe there is lactose in here.
There's lactose in yogurt. It depends on what yogurt you're getting.
If it's Greek yogurt, then you probably don't have a problem, right?
Well, anything Greek is totally cool.
Yeah. But basically, Greek yogurt is good for lactose intolerant people. That's the thing. Yeah.
By the way, the thing that you just emailed us, I can't open the picture. Wish you would have put it in the chat.
You know, I wish you would just shove it in this chat so I can check it out. But what you did put in the chat, though, is, again, just a link to your fan fiction about Connie and Sue.
Read it.
In a romantic relationship in their 30s.
It's funny. It's funny and it's sweet. And
I don't think Bennigan's is going to appreciate being mentioned so much in this.
You don't think? Oh, come on. I mean, people love Bennigan's. It's such a great prod. I mean, it's retro. Guys, I feel like you don't get me. You never have gotten me.
The other thing is, when Signor has his child slave factory making these paintbrushes, he also has put them all in dyed, like, pink or orangish geese.
They
which
all
is
look
strange.
Like Padawans. Yes, they're all like, yeah. They're all, yeah.
I had a question because when Signor is teaching, he's not really, he's wearing both like a suit and then something over it, which I thought maybe was supposed to be a smock, but looked like a judge's robe.
Yeah.
And wait, are you talking about the hair robe? Oh, no.
Later, becomes a hair robe.
He was dressed more like an old school music professor. That's what I kind of thought. It was like a cape. He was wearing like, he was dressed, actually, I think the best out of all the teachers there. And looked, I thought he carried himself.
He was dressed like a professor at like Hogwarts.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Like
yes.
I felt like he was wearing wizard's robes in a way. Like, I agree. Right. He was not wearing what an art teacher would traditionally wear, is like some sort of smock or something like that. He was dressed like he was wearing like robes. Yeah. Which was,
he doesn't like
but
art.
By the way, Jason, I mean, I've never read Harry Potter, but JK has to shut the fuck up.
I don't even. It's not great. It is a tough look. It is, again, for, like, I have such a wonderful relationship to those stories and all of that, but it is a heartbreaking look from JK. Not good. Not good. All bad.
No JK. JK not doing good.
JK, no okay JK. I'm going to workshop it. But it's unsettling and very unfortunate.
Despicable. Okay, the horsehair crop is now in the chat. So everyone can look at the horsehair crop.
Oh, God. This is a Pinterest. Okay, I see it. I see what this is. I don't like the look of this. I don't like this. This is unsettling to me. I wish I hadn't seen this. It looks like someone's ponytail was cut off and it was attached to wood.
And that's what I used to use when I would ride my horses in the backyard.
No wonder they kicked you.
By the way, I don't want people to think that I grew up in a very rich neighborhood. I grew up in a very poor neighborhood that just oddly had a corral in our backyard. Like, it to me, when I think back on it now, it's comical that we had like a barn in our backyard and a very little area for our horses to
maneuver. You were the only human boy in a horse town, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Mayor McHorse treated me with much respect.
Mayor McHorse, always. Just like Mayor McCheese?
Yeah, they knew each other. He took over for him after Mayor McCheese had that pay-for-play
scandal.
I can't
believe an Irish horse was elected mayor.
Can I just play the moment where Señor shows off his evil lair to Connie here? Just, it's a great moment. Here we go.
So, Inspector, you will never come again in my class, huh? Well, now you are in the class, which I never dismiss.
Oh, yeah? I'm going to escape. I'm going to free all your prisoners.
But why? They love me. Don't you, children?
Yes, senor.
You see? You have come for nothing, Inspector. But no, what I am saying, you can make brochures. Sit down, Connie, sit down. Jeremy, show him what to do. I go to make deliveries.
I think these Canadian kids like being there. I think that they liked having a little bit more focus in their daily life.
I mean, they're more. It's more active than their school, you know, that's for sure.
By the way, did you see in the background that the dog was also wearing a hair shirt?
Yes. I just saw that in the clip. I was like, is the dog also wearing a jacket made of Michael's hair? What's going on?
He's making so much hair. And then here's my final question. Not final, but one of my final ones. Signor has a deeply Italian accent. His brother Rabbit has none, and his other brother, Dr. Epstein, has none either. So why is Senor...
They both have accents. They have French accents.
Oh, they're French? Oh, I thought their French was... Okay, I thought it was much more subdued than... I mean, it's much
it's
more
different.
Subdued
than, it's a different accent than Senor, okay. Which is, I think, them trying to throw us off like they're not, like, from the... Like, if they... But they... Because I wrote down at some point... Every single character except the father, has an accent, whether it's British or French or Italian, or everybody pretty much has an accent. But you're right. Signor's is Italian, whereas the other brothers are just French, which is very weird.
Strange. And I mean, I keep on coming back to this, but like what does Signor want out of this? Does he, because we know he has not named his company. He's you know, looking at all those boxes of magical human hairbrushes that are ready to go, where are they going? And what have these orders come in? And
the brother
does he really want to make money?
Yeah, the brother who's the art dealer, though, seems to be, when they show, okay, so Suze and her father finally make the connection, and they're all brothers. They go to the art dealer and they're like, hey, we need to find your brother. He's got 20 kids. He's kidnapped 20 children. And the art dealer seemingly knows this. That's... and is not interceding in what is arguably a child slavery ring. Who knows what's going on? He's turning a blind eye because the brother is supplying him with paintings? Question mark? Because he says, if I tell you, then I won't get any more of his paintings. So he's, I'm assuming, selling Signor's paintings
for a pretty penny.
But they were like, well, he's like, but I won't see him again until Friday.
Can
they're like,
everyone,
but it's Tuesday.
Can everybody get into the paintings?
I don't know. So.
Is everyone able to walk into those paintings? Because when they bring Connie into that one room where all the paintings are displayed in that black, like, kind of void, they say these are magical and you can kind of enter into them. But like, so is Rabbit selling paintings that you can enter, and how would even Signor know? Oh boy, I mean, there's a whole market out there. There's a lot of stuff going on. Like, basically, Signor is cornering the market of creating a new style of painting and also the brush to do the painting. He's the Apple of painting.
Well, it would almost be like, I mean, again, this movie uses magic and magical stuff in a way that normal movies would make it the thrust of the movie. And that this movie is just kind of part of it a little bit. But like, if we follow this through to its logical conclusion, there are people who have hung paintings in their homes that they can walk into.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's what's happening. And that's not part of it at all. Like, I would like to see a sequel where someone's just standing in their living room and they walk into a painting and are in, like, this magical waterfall world or whatever, you know?
Right.
I would love that. I mean, by the way,
that would be very interesting.
And I'm also, it's like, if I'm Michael's dad, I'm like, give me some of that hair. Like, what about me? I'm a struggling artist.
Why wasn't his dad being proactive enough to cut that hair and use it as a brush? I mean, instead of just trying to put it in garbage bags and toss it to the curb. I mean, that's what they were just doing. By the way, did you guys know?
By the way, garbage bags full of hair, full, just like
full
black plastic giant.
That was my first band name.
Garbage bags full of hair.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine coming across that?
Can you imagine
opening a garbage bag, seeing it's all human hair, and being like, what must have happened?
What happened here?
What's this story?
Because it's all the same human hair. I started to eat a breakfast burrito, and then about at the hour mark of this movie, I was like, oh, I can't eat food during this.
I have a strict rule. I never eat during any of our movies because I never know.
I resisted the urge to wake you up last night, June, to make you watch this with me because I really needed to see it. Did you guys recognize the voice behind the sultry songs in this film?
No.
It's the one and only Miss Celine Dion.
Well, it's Canadian, of course.
And, that makes total sense.
I did notice the last song. I was like, that's interesting. Because the last song, when that started, I was like, wow, this is a really powerful, sensual song. Of course it's Celine.
All right, let's hear, just because we can understand the words a little bit, the Michael song, the first song.
Oh, this is her singing it. Oh, wow.
Where you start, calling to your heart, everything you see, everything you find, the darkest memories all come clearer when you open your eyes.
I love that. That's the wino. So this is when he gives money to the wino. Yes.
These are fully edited music videos. And then we'll play a little bit of Magic Man, the French one, just so you get a taste of the different types of songs. But these are made into full music videos for Canadian television because, and I didn't want to tell you this at the beginning, this movie is one of a series of 25 films, 25 fables under the title what? Tales for All. A series for
That's
children
what
and films.
That's the opening title said, yeah.
Yes, and most of these Tales for All included scary things and things like dogs were.
Okay, so this is like a Goosebumps kind of thing for Canada?
Yes. That's maybe? What it seems I don't, like.
Yeah. And is Celine Dion always involved, or is this just in this movie?
Just this one, because she was cornered at a radio studio and they made her agree to sing it. Skippy Peanut Butter paid for product placement. And these were also turned into books. So there were books here too. Mm. The Dog Who Stopped the War is one of the most famous ones. There's also
I feel like we have to dig in on this series. This is kind of like there's 25 of them.
There's 25 and the reoccurring theme is dogs and ghosts. There are a lot of dogs and ghosts in here. Here's just the French Magic Man song. It's called Listen to the Magic Man. Just so you know, when you're listening to this, it looks like a beautiful movie of about a magic man with a magical paintbrush. The kids are excited. She's excited. She's in one of the paintings. It's not really letting you know the horror of this film.
I mean, the scene is like a child predator who has kidnapped 20 children and is forcing them to watch him paint a magical painting that he then walks into. I mean, And it's also interesting to see like super young Celine Dion.
Yes.
Because I feel like when I'm become aware of her, she's already had a full, must have been a full career in Canada.
Yes.
I knew she was Canadian and all that, but I didn't know she'd been, because she looks like a teenager here, you know?
She looks like, this is like her Debbie Gibson, you know, like electric youth phase. I will say this, this movie has frightened many a kid, has lived in their memory. It's become iconic. These Celine Dion songs, I think, in Canada are incredibly iconic. They're great songs. They actually have good melody to it. They're fun to listen to. But I wanted to kind of read you some opinions about this movie, because obviously we are baffled by it. And we're joined by a legion of people that have been baffled and terrorized by this movie. So this is not as much of a second opinion as a shared opinion. We now present to you Second Opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit, yet this person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. I need a second opinion.
That, of course, was John Lajoie. And I will tell you that when John came on the show to do whatever Steven Seagal movie he did, I think Glimmer Man, he said to me, if you ever do this movie, you need to find it. You need to do this movie. And I never really heard of it, but he's from Canada and he knew it. And so I've always kept this in the back of my head. And these reviews are crazy.
Wait, can I ask you, Paul, Paul and June, I guess, were you guys aware of this movie as kids?
Never.
I've never heard of this movie.
Okay. Good. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if this was one of those things that I just somehow like missed and was ubiquitous, but no, it sounds like not. Okay.
No. And basically most of the reviews follow a format like this. I thought this was a nightmare that I had as a child. I'm so relieved to know that it's actually real. Like that is that it's kind of deeply in everyone's subconscious. And this one starts off with Creepy Pretty writes, this is a crazy, creepy children's movie that will leave you wondering what the hell you just watched. Something my boyfriend watched as a little kid that gave him nightmares and left him wondering if this movie could possibly exist. ... It does. 5 stars. Title, Ruined Childhood.
Wow.
Wow.
I can see that. This would be an unsettling movie. To seeing it as a kid, you know, it would be because there's no rhyme or reason. Tragedy just befalls this boy.
It really is bizarre. And this is, there's a lot of like connection over this film too. Like this person writes, this is Jake the Snake. Not the actual
Roberts?
Jake the Snake. Yeah, not the actual
Jake
one.
The Snake Roberts, the wrestler?
He goes, I am super excited to be able to watch this again. I just ordered a copy. Thank God no one wanted to buy my VCR at the last 3 yard sales.
Wait a minute. Jake the Snake is having so many yard sales, cannot unload a VCR.
Can't get that VCR to move. Talking about old TV shows to this girl at work and this movie came up. I was floored that she knew what I was talking about. I've tried to explain this movie to others and they think I'm crazy, but she will flip out when she sees that I got this film for her birthday. She will be 34. ... Soulmate? I think so. 5 stars.
I don't like that.
I don't like it. I don't like that he's created a fantasy where this woman is his dream girl and he's revealing it on an Amazon review.
Oh.
This one is simple. This is from Matt Goldie. He writes, there's something about the tunes in this movie that will put you in a deep trance. I had an extreme out-of-body experience watching this movie, which wouldn't have been possible without the music. Highly recommend this for a good trip. 5 stars, title, subliminal messages galore. And then I'll just read this final one from Renee. And the title
is... Celine's husband, Renee?
Maybe. Written in 2004. It is possible. Renee writes, ooh, man. Million exclamation points. This movie must be seen. I have a neighbor who I was trying to describe this movie to, and I just came off sounding insane. My description was vague since I was so young when I saw it. There was this bald kid who had no hair. He mixed like 15 dead flies into some peanut butter and he put it on his head in the shower. Then his hair grew so fast, they made paintbrushes from it. Then a bunch of kids found a huge scary picture and actually walked into it. My buddy was like, whoa, what kind of weirdo movies did you watch as a kid? No wonder you are the way you are today. And that's all I remembered since I was just a little girl and I was terrified. I too had reoccurring dreams of personified paintings. And my buddy actually thought it was so weird that he looked it up on Amazon and ordered it for me. What a sweet guy. Someone who thinks you're weird and supports you too. Anyway, I haven't seen it in like 10 years and I'm watching it tonight with my quote unquote buddy. Thank you. Oh, and for the record, I'm pretty normal. Thank you. 5 stars.
Do we think at all that the writer of that review is the person that Jake the Snake got the DVD,
I just think that this movie brings people together to have like sex. I think this is a movie.
Oh, I like the narrative around this movie is basically nobody believed me, but I'm right. Like everybody was scarred by this movie and couldn't convince people it was a real thing. Like this is like a folk tale or something. It's like it's upsetting kids, and then people are like, "That's not real."
I do feel like, and I'm being very sincere when I say that I do feel like this movie has a very Hans Christian Andersen kind of story, like those kind of scary fables that you hear as a kid. Like this has all the elements of it, like, but it's not been sanitized at all. But 1985, it should have been. Like they should have been like, "Oh, it's not that bad." It's like, you know, but this is like Hansel and Gretel, but scary. I mean, it's a scary, weird
definitely
movie.
It's definitely scary. And it's this, the thing that I found scariest about the movie is that Michael, the little boy who has the fright, loses his hair, does the peanut butter solution, grows his hair, gets kidnapped, is, you know, by Senor, all that stuff. That little boy all of the, in traditional like storytelling, he like Goonies or any of those other, he would have agency of some sort. He would be trying to do something, and he throughout the movie things just happen to him. He almost the only thing he really does is the go into the haunted house, really. That's right. The only thing he does actively. Everything else is reactive. The ghosts give him the information, he puts it on his head, he does the, so you know, the everything happens to him, which is weird. So that's why the third act, Connie has to be mobilized as the lead of the movie, because he's going to figure it out, and Susie as well. They're going to do something. They're the only active characters, which is such a bizarre thing to have in a kid's movie, a child who doesn't have a driving emotional engine.
Well,
you know,
Jason,
towards,
I just want you to say, like, you know, what you've just really described there is what all bald people go through.
Oh boy.
This isolating paralysis, you know, and I think that this movie does a beautiful job, and I think he did a great job summing it up. What we all have to go through, you know, we only have our friends to help us get through it, and they don't want to help us get through it, you know.
Listen, I felt very connected to the story of a young boy who suddenly has way more hair than he ever thought would be possible for a child his age. That really hit home for me. I understand why the bald part hit home for you, but for me, the overgrowth of hair was just as was very unsettling.
Wow.
Wow.
really connected with me. I mean, I was like,
as someone who's never struggled with having too much or too little, like, I couldn't really place myself in this movie. I couldn't see myself reflected back, and that was hard. It was like,
you didn't feel like you were a Suze?
I didn't feel like I was. I mean, I guess I most closely identified to Suze, but specifically, I loved her outfits. I mean, I loved Suze's wardrobe.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
I liked her. She was my favorite part.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I think we've said it all. I mean, we really got to the bottom of this in more ways than I ever thought was possible. And I'm so glad we finally got to do this movie, which is free on Amazon Prime. You can watch the deleted scenes on YouTube. Jason, June, anything you want to promote, tell anybody about, anything at all?
Nope.
Stay safe, stay home, you know, be well, everybody.
Yeah, yes. same here. I just will direct you guys to, Jason and I got to do a fun Marvel comic book thing. It's the World's Greatest Book Club with Paul Scheer. Jason's on it. Just type in Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, and Marvel. You can watch us talk about comics and also support.
Which was so fun, by the way, Paul. And that's that video that we did is one in a series that Paul did for Marvel, all of which are terrific. You talked to Damon Lindelof. You talked to a whole bunch of people that were just like really great interviews. If you like comics and stuff like that, I really enjoyed the series.
You'll get a little taste of some fun books to check out. And I just want to give big...
Oh, and also, you know what? Sorry, if you don't mind, I will mention there's a new animated show coming out on HBO Max called Close Enough from the people that created the regular show. And I'm one of the voices on that. And it's coming out in July.
Oh, I love that. And I want to say...
I just remembered.
A big thank you to our super producer, Cody, who's keeping it all together at home and making everything stay on track. Our amazing engineer, Devin, who makes these things sound way better than they need to. Avril Halley and Nate Kiley, who do our research and picking of the films. Also, Zach McAleese and Kyle Waldron, who does some of our great art that you can find on our Instagram and Facebook pages. Molly Reynolds, who is just, I would say a designated hitter. She comes in, whatever the job is, she knocks it out of the park. And then if you like the show and you want to hear what happens behind the scenes of these movies, Blake Harris has been doing fantastic interviews with people involved in Don't Tell Her It's Me, or AKA Boyfriend School. Also with Ninja 3, the director of Ninja 3. And he has some people lined up for this movie as well. So they always play on our mini episodes. So take a listen there. And if you want to talk more on our mini episode about this, give us a call at 619-PAULASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next week on the mini episode. Bye for now.